하리오 사 Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, 121 Top. Srila Prabhupada summarizes chapter 6 as follows. The process of devotional activities from the beginning to the stage of transcendence has all been duly explained to satisfy the inquiries of Vyasadeva. Narada has explained how the seeds of devotional service were sown by transcendental association and how they gradually developed by hearing the sages. The result of such hearing is detachment from worldliness, so much so that even a small boy could receive the death news of his mother, who was his only caretaker, as the blessing of God. And at once he took the opportunity to search out the Lord. A sincere urge for having an interview with the Lord was also granted to him, although it is not possible for anyone to see the Lord with mundane eyes. He also explained how, by execution of pure transcendental service, one can get rid of the fruit of action of accumulated work, and how he transformed his material body into a spiritual one. The spiritual body is alone able to enter into the spiritual realm of the Lord, and no one but a pure devotee is eligible to enter into the kingdom of God. All the mysteries by transcendental realization are duly experienced by Narad Muni himself, and therefore by hearing such an authority, one can have some idea of the results of devotional life, which are hardly delineated even in the original text of the Vedas. In the Vedas and Upanishads, there are only indirect hints at all this. Nothing is directly explained there, and therefore Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature fruit of all the Vedic trees of literature. And so again, summarizing it up then, here, devotional service is planted through association, and then by that continued association, then it's cultivated. Right, and brings one to the transcendental position. So here, by doing the devotional activity, detachment is coming. Right, so knowledge is there, he's hearing, but detachment is also coming. So therefore, being a small child, the only one taking care of him was his mother, and then when she left, then he was still able to pursue his devotional activities. Right? He was still fixed in his devotional service. Right? So, yeah. And then we see here he has a sincere urge, right? So he has that desire. By associating, he makes that advancement, he gets that interest, but he has to actually have that desire himself, right? In other words, causeless mercy is there, is that we get that association, but we still have to try to take advantage of the association. Not that we just say, oh, it's up to Krishna to do everything. Or, it's whatever Krishna wants to do. But the thing is he basically only does in a direction you want. Yes. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
If you don't want to move forward, then he doesn't make the arrangements that way. Yes. Right? So you have to have the desire. So he had that sincere desire, so that's why he got the darshan of the Lord, even though technically he wasn't in a position to see. Right? Like that. Okay. And then Narad Muni, he's realized this, therefore he's in authority. By hearing from some such, you can get that benefit. That's why then the importance of hearing from the acharyas, this amnaya, right? Hearing what the parampara has to say. So the authority of, Srila Prabhupada, Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath, Baladev, Jiva Goswami, all the acharyas, this is very important, right? because they have that realization. And then we can discuss it and get that benefit. So we're directly associating by hearing. Right? When there's a like this is a purport by Prabhupada, we're directly associating with Prabhupada. When there's one by Vishwanath, we're directly associating. When Rupa Goswami, we're direct. Right? So that's important. That's why the hearing process is so powerful. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? So it's a matter of that association through hearing. It's not about the physical, it's about hearing. Right? It means there's benefit in the physical association also, but the most important thing about the physical is the instruction. Right? And so now the Bhagavatam, so that explanation then gives the direct understanding. So that's what Narad Muni is requesting that he brings out. Because in the Vedas and Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Mahabharata, it's only hinted at. Right, just like raso vaisaha, right? It means he is rasa. But it doesn't give more than that, so it's just hinted at. You know what I'm saying? The evidence is there, means the positions are there, there's nothing left out, but it's only hints. You know? You understand how he's one with everything, you understand how he's different, but they never like really bring it all together. Does that make sense? So that's why then the Bhagavatam is the mature fruit. Yes.
Can we say that Upanishads, because it's only philosophy, and Mahabharata is not scores, when it's combined and it becomes Srimad Bhagavatam in a more elevated sense?
On one level you could say.
I mean, that's what we did.
Basically, but it's more than that. See, because here is that the stories are all very nicely done and tastefully done. So we see stories in the Bhagavatam. And the Upanishads are giving the essential philosophy of the Vedas. So the Bhagavatam's doing that. But it's more than that. That's why then the point of mature fruit. Because then the element of the emphasis on pure devotion, that's what makes Bhagavatam unique. Does that make sense? So it's not just the literary technique or the literary elements that's there that makes it. So of course it is a combination of those two. But even the Puranas, then they'll have more of that kind of element. But it's still none of them just only focuses on pure devotion. As we mentioned, as in the beginning, the Karma Yoga is kicked out. So as we see, then Vishwanath is pointing out, that means sakam karma yoga. Nishkam karma yoga is favorable for pure devotion if that's the goal. But otherwise, if it's not, like the Mayavadis, they use nishkam, that's also kicked out. So in that way, karma yoga that's not connected to the idea of pure devotion is thrown out in Bhagavatam. Right? But Mahabharata, it's top of the line is nishkarmya. You know, whether it's devotional or not. You see so many stories and the people, their renunciation, their detachment, their sense of duty. You know, all these different things are all there. You know, like Arjuna and his brothers are walking at night after being in the forest. They're going towards Ekachakra, right? So, and they come to the Ganga. Right? Arjuna is holding a torch, you can see that they're coming. But they're attacked by the Gandharva king, right? Then when asked afterwards why he attacked, he said, because you're doing something wrong. Right? You're coming at night to the Ganga, but Arjuna showed how that wasn't a problem. If it had been another body of water, yes, it's a problem. But the Ganga is not a problem. Second is, as you pointed out, you're Kshatriyas, you're not walking with a Brahmin in front. You have to follow Brahmins. You're a Kshatriya, you have to follow Brahmins. You're not following Brahmins. Third is, what's your ashram? Right? They've graduated, but they're not married. Right? And there's no plan of getting married. So it's not that they're a snatak, there's a plan to get married, so they're going to do some study. They're just wandering. Right? So they're not in any ashram. So his point is in front of, and the Gandharva king is there with his women, right? So therefore, in front of the women, nothing wrong is allowed to happen. right? Because women appreciate dharma, that everything has to be right and just. So therefore, he attacked them. So you can say all these nice things of dharma are being established, but why is he following the dharma? It's not pure devotion, right? Does that make sense? He just doesn't want his women to go bad, so because he has to, you know, take care of them. You know, it's not that he's necessarily worried about the Pandavas or worried about his devotion. Right? If his women become irreligious, therefore then it'll be more difficult to perform his, you know, sadhana. You understand? So Mahabharata is bringing out excellent points that are very valuable for the devotees, but only the devotees will understand their real value. The materialists will see the material value of them, and they'll only use them materially. Even if you talk about the Supreme, okay, the Supreme is the one who sanctions everything. He's the one that sanctions my material desires. So I do the yajna nice and please him, and then he'll give me my material desires. Right? So even though they're using the medium of bhakti, it's secondary. Right? So that's the sakam. So it's not recommended. You have great, great things. Jarakaru, right? Very renounced. All he does is he's a yayajara, yayavara. They're a group of Brahmins that don't have a house. All they do is wander. So they get up in the morning, you know, and you know, after the bath and things like that, they just start walking. And when it starts to get dark at night, that place is their home. And they just stay there. And that's all they do. And that's the whole community. So even if they're married, that's what they all do. You know, so they're very detached. I mean, how detached is that? Right? But then, because his interest in doing that is not Brahman, it's the heavenly planets, therefore he's obliged to have children. Right? Because he's a materialist. Right? You have to pay the debt to the forefathers. So then, he agrees, but he'll only marry a wife who has the same name as him. Because Jarakaro means the great waste, means that you have a big healthy body and you waste it away. So he'll only marry a girl who has exactly the same name. Means that she is of equal nature doing the same kind of austerities. Right? So Vasuki, knowing that his child is the only one that's going to save the snakes, then he arranges, you know, his sister's named that, you know, and she's brought up like that. So then when he's ready to get married, then they get married. But as soon as the child is there, conceived, he leaves and goes back to wandering around. Now, it means great detachment, great knowledge, great austerities, but no devotion. So that's what it's meant. It's only hinted at. So it's more, because the stories are all connected with devotion. They're bringing out the element of pure devotion. They're defining the difference between mixed and pure. So that's the real essence, the real uniqueness of Bhagavatam. Because Dharma's already been established. You want to know Dharma? Read Mahabharata. Like that. That already establishes that. So Bhagavatam uses the stories, but its emphasis is on pure devotion, not on the Dharma aspect. Because that's already covered. You know, it's just like, you know, when you're doing, you know, 10th grade math, it doesn't cover the things done in 9th grade. Right? It already moves on. So Bhagavatam is already moving on. So only if there's some significance, then some elements will be brought out. But generally it's showing how Dharma is used in devotional service. But the details of it aren't done because the Paramahamsas means they've already read Mahabharata. Right? They've already read the Vedic literatures. They know the Vedic literatures. Now they want more. Is that okay? Yes?
So then the question comes then, without preliminaries, how can we just get into Bhagavatam right away? Because Srila Prabhupada gave it, you know, to everybody.
Basically. Yes, because that's the purports. If it didn't have the purports, one wouldn't catch that the Bhagavatam is all about pure devotion. Because when it says it kicks out cheating religions, then you think, okay, there's Scientology, or, you know, there's this, you know, but, you know, what I'm doing is fine. You know, like that, you know. So the whole point is that you wouldn't catch. It's the purports then are given. But the point is then the recommendation is then you start with Gita. Right, then you'll understand the philosophical points, and then In here, you see it opens with Mahabharata, so you actually get the clear, actual, true, direction or mood or flavor or understanding of Mahabharata. So the first canto is just like, after this, the next chapter. Then we go into, it just starts Mahabharata, basically, for 12 chapters. Like that. So it also will have, you'll get that element. And we see in the purports, especially in the first two cantos, anytime it comes to a person, the whole background, stories, everything's already put in. So Prabhupada's worked in that so that with these two cantos that you kind of, if nothing else, if you just read these two cantos, you can get the complete understanding. Like that. You know, and then Krishna book, he's written in all the 9 cantos, so you get all that. You know, so that was the whole thing. And then the TLC. Then that was like the complete Chaitanya Charitamrita by the 5 conversations. Those are the most essential points. You know, so like that, then he targeted. You know, and then once those were in place, then he started on the full Bhagavatam. You know. It's already been worked out. But as a general rule, you wouldn't, because we're not reading. Like if we read Vishnu Purana. We don't have purports. We just have the translations, right? You know, and who knows what the translations are? You know, some German scholar. Or something.
Plank.
Plank. Yes. You know. Plank. Yes. Like that. As already mentioned, question 10 asked by Srila Vyasadeva in the beginning of this chapter has 3 parts. Question 10, part 1, what did you, Narada, do after the departure of the sages who, in your prior birth, instructed you? Question 10, part 2, how did you pass that life after initiation and how did you attain your present body? Now notice here he was initiated, but did we see any ritual?
No.
Because we do, the point was, as he said, he came to the platform of prema, right? But in here it's defined, I think it was Vishwanath was defining, that prema meant rati, means the first stage of prema. Not prema, means prema in category, not prema in specific, as the second level. But prema meaning the overall concept. So he was on the bud of prema. So that means he's liberated. And in liberation stage, instruction is initiation. Right? It's only when we're conditioned, then you require a formal ritual to so that the gross and subtle body are purified and you connect yourself properly. So he was initiated. That's why they said. And so they know this because he didn't say, therefore I was initiated by... No, he just told, he heard the instruction, came to that platform, so then they're saying initiation, right?
Yes.
And how did you attain your present body? Question 10, part 3. How are you able to remember your prior birth, which was in a previous day of Brahma? Right? So it wasn't even just like the last birth, you know, it's like a previous day of Brahma, right? Does that make sense? So, you know, we're talking about some serious regression. In summary, Narada Muni's answer is as follows. 1. After associating with pure devotees and taking initiation from them, one should become serious about Krishna consciousness. When Krishna kindly removes one's material entanglements, one should devote his time solely to spiritual development, either by fearlessly traveling or by sitting in the holy place where repeatedly hearing and chanting the holy scriptures, 5-15. Right. So means one should take up the process seriously, either through traveling and taking a giving association, or sitting in a holy place and taking a giving association.
Okay. Yes. It means that everybody who is initiated, he needs to develop the preaching spirit.
The preaching spirit, but more important, he's bringing out association, because preaching is actually giving association.
Yes.
Right. Many times you take preaching is just, we're just talking. That's how you get this concept of hard preaching and soft preaching. But if it's association, then that means association means you have to relate. If you're relating, it's not hard or soft. It's just preaching. Right? Does that make sense? It's only when you don't see it as association, then you might speak stronger than is necessary. Or soft priest, you'll speak softly, weaker than necessary.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it means if you go hard, soft, soft sounds good, hard sounds bad.
Yes.
But if you go strong, weak,
yeah,
then weak sounds bad and strong sounds good. You understand? So it's just terminology. That's the fun about political correctness. It's just terms. It's just words. It has, there's no substance. Because if you say define soft preaching, you'll get this waffle, this big waffle. And we're not talking about those nice ones with butter and stuff like that. We're just talking about a lot of air. Does that make sense? Yes.
What is the difference? Srila Prabhupada mentioned many times association of pure devotees.
Yes.
And to say association of devotees. In general, which are,
yeah, but it's
we do not know that it's
something. No, but pure means they're interested in pure devotional service, like that. That's Baladev's brought that out. If you're interested in that, that's your goal. Then it's categorized as pure devotion, right? Does that make sense? Like that. That's the point. Okay, so it's association. Now, in that association, there's naturally Guhyam akati prichati, right? There's you know, speaking confidentially, hearing confidentially, like that. So that's where the preaching goes on. But the point is association. Does that make sense? That's what is bringing out here. The Bhagavatam is bringing out these elements. So that's what you're doing. Prabhupada is seeing it as associating. Right? Like Brahma, when Narad Muni asks the questions, because it's a good question, therefore he thanks him. That you've asked a nice question that we can nicely discuss Krishna consciousness, remember Krishna about. Right? So it's about association. So preaching means association. Right? But if it's just we're preaching, then we miss the point. But still, missing the point and preaching is still better than not preaching. The point is because the association is going on whether you realize it or not. It just means it's like Krishna told Nandamava, is that if you don't know why you're doing something, that you get less benefit, but you still get benefit. You know, you get more benefit by understanding what you're doing, why you're doing it, you know, like that. So that's all. Anything connected with Krishna, if it's in the, you know, bona fide, you know, coming in contact with the chit potency, is valuable. Way more than anything in the material world, even the most wonderful, pious situation, is still more valuable than that. But now you should add to that the proper understanding, proper association, proper practice, then it increases very nicely. So, yeah.
When we say association, we're meaning we give association, like for very new people or for those who are not Krishna conscious yet.
Yes.
Because if we take association, we see
yes,
the
yes.
association.
No, it means you give to those junior to you, you take from those senior to you. You don't take from those junior because then you understand. Like that. In this case, the point is amongst the society of devotees, someone is advanced in one area, maybe not in another. So where they're advanced, that's where you take association. Where there's weak, you give. So it'll be dynamic. But the principle remains the same. Okay? Yes. Okay. 2. Thus, by taking initiation from and serving one's bona fide spiritual masters, and here it also is in plural, spiritual masters, so that's diksha and siksha. Right? And by following the regulative principles and practices of devotional service. Because here it would be, if we're talking the four Kumaras as one, then that means they're the spiritual master. Yes. Right? But at the same time, is generally amongst them, I think it's Sanat Kumar. He's generally the leader of them, the senior of the brothers. So then you can say he's the, you know, Diksha, they're the Siksha. But whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. Right? But the point is for us, we have Diksha and Siksha. So then. And by following the regulative principles and practices of devotional service. Right? So you're hearing, you're serving, you're practicing. Right? One's love of God will gradually progress until it matures beyond the probationary regulative stage. Right? It'll come to the transcendental stage. So then bhava. Right? Then by the Lord's causeless mercy, One will be able to, in ecstasy, directly see and hear Krishna by his mercy. Right? Can you catch that? Because here you can say regulative state. Someone can say, no, well, that's Vaidhi Bhakti. But Raganuga Bhakti is also regulatory. It's just that it's spontaneous in its regulation rather than just because you have to. But you notice here, regular state, then by the Lord's mercy, one will be able to in ecstasy. Right? So ecstasy is the symptom of bhava. Right? So you understand? So you can place it nicely. Directly see and hear Krishna by his mercy. Still it's by his mercy. It's not because now I've gotten to this stage. No. Yeah. One will be able to, okay, directly see and hear Krishna by his mercy. To reach the stage of ecstatic love for Krishna, one should receive training in a temple, perform archana, and there serve Krishna. These practices will naturally increase one's desire to serve more and more. So here, Prabhupada's, right, you're taking, this is being taken. Okay, pointing out here is that from a temple, because now what's the standard in a temple? Is it, we do worship in our homes, like that. But what is the standard of worship in our home? It'll be home worship. And what is what defines home worship as opposed to temple worship? Not necessarily. Some are quite strict on one thing, but according to our, in other words, home worship is around our ability or facility. Temple worship is around the deity. Right? Though, of course, we always try to make adjustments in the temple and all that for preaching and all that kind of thing. So, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, you understand?
Yeah.
But the point is that the temple worship, you have to make adjustments in your life for. Right? Mm-hmm. Means, what happens if in your home you have your Mangal Arati at 4:30, but you got up at 6? What time's Mangal Arati? 6:30. Okay. Now, what happens if you got up at 6 and you went to the temple? You understand? That's the difference. You have to adjust. So that's why it's been recommended, is training in the temple. That's why in a community there are temples. You have a big community, you can have more temples. But still, even though the practices are going on in the home, the temple still has a value. Right? And the point is how many people can fit in the temple, therefore community. So you have to have both. This idea that it's only temple, and if you're a community, you're in Maya, or only community and temples are archaic, these are both wrong understandings. You have to have both. Yeah. These practices will naturally increase one's desire to serve more and more. Thus, through intensely hankering for Krishna's service, one will directly experience Krishna's transcendental presence. Right? So intensely hankering, right? So we start off with some desire occasionally, right? Then it becomes more regular. Then it comes to intense. Right? So that's the process we're trying to do here. Because that's the real crux that's going on in Bhava Sadhana. Right? Because Smarana Dasa means how much are you absorbed in Krishna. And until you come to Samadhi, then you don't see Krishna. When you come to the Samadhi point, that's when you see Krishna. Right? Or it may be pointed out before from a distance. But actually meeting Krishna only comes after Samadhi. Right? Which we can see can be developed quite quickly. Right? If you're in the spiritual world and spiritual body, in the spiritual association, the eternal associates, it moves quite quickly. But the point is it's still the same process. You have to want it. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, yes.
Some people say that, some devotees say that when you keep chanting, you get to a certain point where you see Krishna's pastimes, like happening in front of you.
Well, it means how much happening in front of you. It means they're happening in the mind. Or whether they're directly happening to you.
Well, somebody said that...
They can come to that point if you're on the platform of bhava, so you can get to that point where you can see them.
But bhava is not samadhi.
Bhava, within bhava, the third stage, then you get to samadhi. Right? So in other words, if someone's seeing directly the pastimes, then, you know, they're quite advanced. You know, like Rupa Goswami, he was saying, you know, so it's good.
Yes, an already, yes, it's nice.
But otherwise, the past times are revealed in the mind.
Yes, after the qualities are revealed, after the name is revealed. You understand? It's not that you can't hear and then the pastimes will be happening. You know what I mean? You can sit and try to think about them, but it won't necessarily last. Right? Because you're associating with the name, but you're not taking that the name is having these pastimes. You're taking, I'm thinking about these. I'm chanting and thinking about these pastimes. You know?
Like consciously thinking.
Yeah, you understand? It's just like saying, I'm with the person and I'm thinking about activities that I do with the person.
Yeah.
You understand? You don't do that. When you're with the person, you interact with the person. So the point is the name is the person. You're here. Then the qualities become revealed. Then the pastimes. Right? Actually, after name, it's form. And form, then qualities of pastimes. So if we have that, you know, how intensely we want, and that intensity is consistent. Because sometimes it may come to that point, but then again, other times it's not. Then again, and then it's not, right? But it means when it's consistent. So that's your stages of absorption in the Lord. Right, you know, occasionally or regularly, or quite steady. But then there's intensity, right? And then that full absorption—that's samadhi. Does that make sense? So these are the levels. Thus, through intensely hankering for Krishna's service, one will directly experience Krishna's transcendental presence. Even a short period of training and devotional service ultimately and inevitably leads to association with Krishna. Whatever devotional service one renders is never lost, but accumulates until it is completely mature. Verses 16 through 25. So that's going to come. It's just a matter of time. You know, you're more absorbed in that, it comes quicker. Not, it'll come anyway. But how long you have to wait, then that's another thing. Is that what he says? Yes. Three, because Prabhupada recommends do it in one life. You know, why be like Jarabhart and have to go through a few, right? You know, he's there and, you know, I would say out in the wilderness alone, then he's a deer out in the wilderness alone, then he, you know, is born in a nice Brahmin family, but he has to, you know, act as if he's deaf and dumb and stupid and all that kind of stuff. You know. So, you know, avoid all that. In this life, go back to Godhead. Then three, thus a pure and sincere devotee experiences the association of the Lord through continuously and selflessly chanting and preaching. In this way, prepares for his liberation by going back to Godhead in his spiritual body in the next life. And then, the next life, yeah. As he serves in this life, his present material body is surcharged with spiritual energy. Even if a great liberated devotee may again have to take birth, neither his birth nor death will be ordinary. His appearance and disappearance will be like Krishna's, who carries on his activities in an unlimited transcendental body. By following the footsteps of great authorized devotees like Narad Muni, a pure devotee is awarded with so much benedictions by the Lord that he continuously and lovingly chants Krishna's glories. Thus he captures the Lord's attention and obliges him to always be visible to him, right? Because he's continuously and lovingly, right? One can cross the ocean of miseries only through devotional service. One should therefore change all his thinking and acting into Krishna conscious thinking and acting. Since we know from Narad Muni how to achieve a static love of God, we should use our free will to execute devotional service. Our mission should be to preach the glories of devotional service to the suffering souls within this world, as Narad himself does, 26 and 38. Okay, then we have the questions, review questions, and the essay. And then chapter 7.
The pure devotee like Narada Muni is as free as the Lord.
Is as?
Free.
Free, yes.
Means
the Lord means, when you say as free as the Lord, means he is, but it's by the Lord's grace he's that free. The Lord is by his own, just his own, Will is that tree. Like that. So therefore, Narad Muni, and Narad Muni seems to be, you know, as an example, quite free, right? Because he's, you know, can go anywhere in the cosmic creation.
So we can say it is a synthesis. When we become advanced, freedom is increasing.
Yes, freedom is increasing. But that's because you're using your freedom in the Lord's service. The less you use it in the Lord's service, the less you're free.
Yes.
You know, it's just like the good citizen. He has more freedoms than the person in jail, because he's willing to use his freedom appropriately. While the criminal-minded person, you know, he'll misuse his freedoms, so therefore he's restricted, you know. And then as long as he follows the rules there, he has how much freedom is allowed within the prison. But if within the prison he makes trouble, then he's restricted more and more until he's like stuck in solitary. You know what I'm saying? So like that, you know, you get too out of hand, and you know, there's trees, rocks, you know, there's, you know, blades of grass, you know, there's all kinds of places to stick those that are just a little more wild than they should be.
Some of these trees, they live a long time.
Yeah. Like that. I think there's ones in Southern California, they go back to the Dwapara Yuga. Mm-hmm. So that's why they're that size, the Dwapara Yuga trees.
Wow.
The redwoods?
Yeah, they're huge.
Chapter 7. The son of Drona punished. Pratigya. Srimad Bhagavatam 1735. Lord Sri Krishna said, O Arjuna, you should not show mercy by releasing this relative of a brahmana, Brahma Bandhu, for he has killed innocent boys in their sleep. From the purport, a person who happens to take birth in the family of a brahmana, but is not qualified to be called a brahmana, is addressed as the relative of a brahmana. So that means that position is given. Because there must be some piety.
Yeah.
But it's not enough that they actually practice. Right?
Yeah.
Like that. And not as a brahmana. Or as a relative of a brahmana and not as a brahmana. The son of a high court judge is not virtually a high court judge. But there is no harm in addressing a high court judge's son as a relative of the honorable justice. Therefore, you know, so in other words, even here by this example, you're respecting the judge. You know, or you're respecting the Brahman by saying relative of a Brahman as opposed to the person. Therefore, as by birth only one does not become a high court judge, so also one does not become a Brahmana simply by birthright, but by acquiring the necessary qualifications of a Brahmana. As a high court judgeship is a post for the qualified man, so also the post of a Brahmana is attainable by qualification only. The Shastra enjoins that even if good qualifications are seen in a person born in a family other than that of a Brahmana, the qualified man has to be accepted as a Brahmana. And similarly, if a person born in the family of Brahmana is void of Brahminical qualification, then he must be treated as a non-Brahmana, or, in better terms, a relative of a Brahmana.
Right? Yes.
Lord Sri Krishna, the supreme authority of all religious principles, the Vedas, has personally pointed out these differences, and he is about to explain the reason for this in the following shloka. Right. So this is a very essential point. So now we've gotten into about association and everything like that, so now we're going to be discussing how to actually understand qualification. Right? And it's not by birth, right? Because otherwise we see even in the Mahabharata that sometimes the consideration of birth is being brought out. Not always, but just sometimes. Generally, it's brought out when there's seen as a weakness. So in other words, if there's the element of Brahma Bandhu or like that, then or Dvija Bandhu, then they refer to birth. Like that. Chapter summary. Chapter 7, summarized as questions and answers. Questions 11 and 12 of Srimad Bhagavatam are asked by Shonaka of Sutta. Question 11, Srimad Bhagavatam 171. After Narada departed the ashram of Vyasadeva, what did Vyasa do? Answer to this question is given in verses 2 through 8. Question 12, Srimad Bhagavatam 179. If Sukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization as an Atmarama, why did he undergo the study of Srimad Bhagavatam? Answer to this question is given in verses 10 through 11. Adhyayaka Prakashika.
In the seventh chapter, Vyasa sees the meaning of all scriptures while in trance. The withdrawal of the Brahmastra and the punishment of Ashwatthama are also told. Shonaka Rishi inquires from Suta Goswami about Vyasa's activities after Narada's departure. Suta first describes Vyasa's meditation and how through his meditation, Vyasa perfectly understood the Lord, the living entity, and the Lord's material energy. Right? So that's chit achit ishwar. So that is knowledge. That's sambandha gyan. So then when he says here, sees the meaning of all scriptures, as Lord Chaitanya points out, is sambandhavideya prayojana is what all the scriptures talk about. So that means now Vyasa, they've seen that. Vyasa, in order to save the conditioned souls from misery, then compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam and taught it to his son, Sukadeva Goswami. Because right? One might say, "Is no, but he's already saved them from misery by the Mahabharata. Right? By pious activities, then you have a situation that is pleasant, so you don't suffer." But that means, yes, the facilities are as good as they can get, but those facilities still don't satisfy the soul. So therefore, still, the soul is suffering. So Bhagavatam, because it's devotion, then will relieve the suffering. Shaunaka now asks Suta why Sukadev, who was already on the path of self-realization, took the trouble to study the Bhagavatam. After Suta replies that even liberated souls are attracted to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Suta begins answering Shaunaka's earlier questions about Sri Krishna, Maharaj Parikit, and the Pandavas. Footnote 67. These questions were described in Chapter 4. Question 7, 114, 1 through 13. O Suta Goswami, may you please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam as spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. As already mentioned, question 7 has 6 parts. 1. When, where, and why was the Bhagavatam recited? 2. From where did Sukadeva's father, Krishna Dwaipaya Vyasa, get the inspiration to compile the Bhagavatam? 3. After wandering about the earth like a naked madman, how was Sukadeva Goswami recognized as a great sage he actually was when he entered Hastinapur? 4. How did Emperor Parikit meet Sukadeva Goswami? 5. Why did wealthy and powerful Emperor Parikit renounce his kingdom to fast to death on the bank of the Ganges? 6. Emperor Parikit did not live to enjoy his wealth and power, but he lived to give shelter to his subjects. So why did he give up his body, which was a shelter for others? Suta's answers to question 7 carries on until the very end of Srimad Bhagavatam. But, so then we see is that now that he's answered about the position of Suta, that he's attracted to Bhagavatam because it's transcendental, and transcendentalists are attracted to transcendental. Yes. Right? Then now he goes back into these questions. Because first he had to establish why it was spoken. You know, as already, why and where was the Bhagavatam recited? Right. And then where did he get the inspiration? Mm-hmm. Okay, so he's going through these questions. Nice. Suta explains that Ashwatthama, the son of Arjuna's martial teacher, Dronacharya, killed the 5 sleeping Pandava princes after the Battle of Kurukshetra. Ashwatthama flees after his heinous crime. Arjuna sets out to capture him. Ashwatthama tries to escape by using his Brahmastra weapon on Arjuna. When Arjuna sees the glaring Brahmastra threatening him, he prays to Sri Krishna, who is driving his chariot, and then follows Krishna's instructions about counteracting the fearful weapon. Arjuna neutralizes the Brahmastra and then captures and binds Ashwatthama. Krishna then tells Arjuna that Ashwatthama should be killed. Arjuna brings Ashwatthama back to the Pandava camp. There, Draupadi and the other Pandavas are appalled to see Ashwatthama, the son of their teacher, bound with ropes. They demand his release. Bhima alone amongst the Pandavas insists to the contrary that Ashwatthama be killed for his horrendous misdeed. Krishna hints at the solution, and Arjuna understands Krishna's desire, both kills and not kills Ashwatthama, by cutting off the jewel from Ashwatthama's head. Then after releasing the humiliated Ashwatthama, Arjuna and the Pandavas perform the funeral rites for their relatives who have been slain in the Battle of Kurukshetra. Okay. right? So this subtlety, you know, about the kills and not kills. Does we just say, no, practical means just straightforward. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to worry about it. There's no complications like this. But here is that he has to deal with all aspects. Right? He's done a crime. Punishment is there. Same time as he's a Brahmin. He's not supposed to be, you know, punished in this way. Right? So how to balance this? And Krishna, because if Krishna took Draupadi's side, then Bhima would have been left on his own. And it just would have gone that way. But Krishna takes that side, you know, because somebody's got to support Bhima here. You know, at the same time, as you have to accomplish what, how you said, you know, Draupadi wanted. Right? Because otherwise, if Krishna didn't want it, why did he hint? Right? Yeah.
Oh. But, so it appears that this Achintya Bheda Bheda aspect is shown here because Krishna says kill,
yes.
But actually he wants to see what how Arjuna is going to react.
That's the point is being able to deal with two opposing elements simultaneously. That ability to what is it called? Reconcile. So that's the one thing that Narada is expert at is reconciling the seeming differences in scripture or opinions of the sages. Because the Achintya Bheda Tattva can do that. Others have difficulty because you only have one angle of vision. You know, even if you have Dvaita Advaita, you have this or that, not simultaneous. So that's why a lot of times it's difficult that when you're dealing, you give an answer and then it's kind of like, but you didn't answer the question because they want this or that.
Yes.
You have to be able to deal with them both at once. Okay.
And even in Gita, I was thinking it's pretty straightforward, but then here it's like
yes, that's the whole. Because it can't be two. I means the beginning, the two at once, because you have to first understand what one is and what two is. So it's referred to because. That's the difficulty devotees have. Krishna says we'll give up all religion. But as we see when Vishwanath's talking about dharma, he's taking about that one takes up of various dharmas according to one's attachment. So it means you're dealing with a particular category of the material energy, but according to your interest. Therefore, you're looking at it from the dharma aspect. In that, what is the nature of it? What is your duties in that? You know, does that make sense? So they say you take authority. So it's a dharma. There's a nature of authority and what it does, how it works, and everything like that. So that's a dharma where we may have an attraction to that or attachment. Then one can say is that you, how do you say? Yeah, so then you perform them properly. But you engage that in the Lord's service. So that's renunciation. But at some point it's that you want to serve Krishna. So you serve Krishna with your facility, and your facility happens to be the dharma of management. Right? So then it's about managing nicely for Krishna, not managing that you get the good result and then give it to Krishna. The result's already Krishna's. That's why you're working very hard to get it nice. Because for yourself, if you're in an enthusiastic mood or good mood, you'll do it nicely. But if you're not, you won't. But if you're doing it for Krishna, then no matter what your mood is, you'll still do it nicely. Like that. So therefore, then, that giving up of dharma, then devotees say, oh, we don't have to follow any rules. No. It's that you do it for Krishna, but you're using those rules, those recommended activities, in the service of Krishna. Right? So that's the simultaneous. That's where the problem starts. Because before that, it's this or it's that, or, you know, it's very clear. You know, it's just like it's karma yoga, it's jnana yoga, it's jnana. Very simple, but buddhi yoga is all of them together. So then, you know, which is it, you know? You know, he's jnana yoga, but, you know, he's doing this. Yes, but that aspect is you know, there, it means you can't not perform an activity. But the prominence is karma yoga, or prominence is jnana yoga, or the prominence is jnana yoga. So that's the problem always comes up is looking at all these things at once. So that's why then Bhagavatam is more mature, because it takes more maturity. So one starts like that. That's why we generally see if there's questions on category,
It's always going to be in the first six chapters of Gita. It's like guaranteed. But, you know, not 13th chapter, not, you know, not in any of these subtle modes or this or that. It's always going to be those. You know, but it's this, but what about that? But once one can catch that, that they can work together, then one is able to appreciate this. Is that something? Got again.
No,
I think
I
do. It's just a category.
I'm thinking, Brahma Bandhus should be punished or not punished?
Should Brahma Bandhus be punished or not punished? Yes. So that's what we're going to learn. How they're simultaneously punished and not punished. So it will unfold as we go. Yes, a coming attraction.
Stay tuned.
Yes.
Okay.
126. Shlok Anusharanam. Summary of verses. Verses 1 through 7, Srila Vyasadeva Samadhi. In verses 8 through 11, Srila Vyasadeva teaches Srimad Bhagavatam to Sukadeva Goswami. So there's only 11 verses?
There should be another one.
Is it in here?
The chapter somehow is not.
Okay, so, and verses 12 to 58, the capture and punishment of Ashwatthama. Okay. Verses 1 through 7, Srila Vyasadeva's meditation and samadhi. In this section, Sutta describes how, through his meditation, Vyas perfectly understood the Lord, the living entity, and the Lord's material energy. Quote, Rishi Shaunaka asked Sutta what Srila Vyasadeva did next. Sutta Goswami's narrative follows. Srila Vyasadeva sat down on the western bank of the river Saraswati, and after touching water for purification, he fixed his uncontaminated mind in meditation. In trance, Srila Vyasadeva could see the Supreme Lord and in the background his external energy, which was under full control. The illusion that is caused by the external energy can be dispelled by the process of bhakti, thus relieving the spirit soul of the anarta of unwanted illusory and distressful identification with matter. So in other words, here they put distressful with identification. There's no identification, there's no stress. So if someone has it stressing, then it's a matter of identification. But since people in general are ignorant of this, Srila Vyasadeva compiled the great work, Srimad Bhagavatam. Simply by hearing this wonderful Vedic literature, the feeling for loving devotional service under Lord Krishna sprouts up at once in the heart to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. Verses 1 through 7. Because he says the people in general are ignorant of this, because we see in other ages there are those who, by studying the Vedas or the Upanishads, have come to the devotional understanding, right? By association also in the Parampara, they could see it there. But then Bhagavatam makes it very obvious, right? But at the same time, as it doesn't make it, that's the interesting thing about it, it doesn't make it a beginning literature. It's actually the topmost literature, right? So the topmost personalities, they appreciate it. But it's because it's giving the essence that's there, but it's just documented. Narad Muni had instructed his disciple Vyasadeva to remember the pastimes of the Lord continually in Samadhi, 1.5.13, and then to describe his transcendental pastimes more vividly, 1.5.21. Vyasadeva followed the instructions of his guru, and his vision of the Lord and the Lord's energies became the inspiration for writing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Such perfect vision of the Absolute Truth is possible only by the linking process of devotional service. It is important to note that Srila Vyasadeva saw the Absolute Truth as the Shaktiman, the Supreme Person, who is in full control of his energies, and not as an impersonal Brahman or emptiness. 68. But why emptiness?
And voidism.
Yes, voidism. Right?
Okay, footnote 68. This is the Vedic definition of God. Parashri Shaktir Vividhai Vishruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. The Supreme Lord has multipotencies, which act so perfectly that all consciousness, strength, and activity are being directed solely by His will. Svetasvatara, Upanishad 6.8. He also saw the precarious state of the conditioned souls entrapped by the external energy of the Lord, footnote 69. In other words, he saw how the Lord has illusion under his control and how the jiva is fully controlled by the illusion. In his purport to 175, Srila Prabhupada explains why the Lord allows the external energy to bewilder his parts and parcels. Quote, the present conditional state is due to the influence of the external energy, which means that the illusory energy takes the initiative while the Supreme Lord is aloof. The Lord does not desire that a living being be illusioned by external energy. The external energy is aware of this fact. But still she accepts the thankless task of keeping the forgotten souls under illusion by her bewildering influence. The Lord does not interfere with the task of the illusory energy because such performances of the illusory energy are also necessary for reformation of the conditioned soul. An affectionate father does not like his children to be chastised by another agent, yet he puts his disobedient children under the custody of a severe man just to bring them to order. Right? Much like Prabhupada's father, you know, had hired somebody who was very strict to take him to school. He wasn't about to go to school.
Yes. Is the external energy conscious?
Yes. Perfect. It's just that means that the elements there, she's not, but she's conscious. Mm-hmm. It's just, But the all-affectionate Almighty Father at the same time desires relief for the conditioned soul, relief from the clutches of the illusory energy. The king puts the disobedient citizens within the walls of the jail, but sometimes the king, desiring the prisoner's relief, personally goes there and pleads for a reformation. And on his doing so, the prisoners are set free. Similarly, the Supreme Lord descends from his kingdom upon the kingdom of illusory energy, and personally gives relief in the form of the Bhagavad Gita, wherein he personally suggests that although the ways of illusory energy are very stiff to overcome, one who surrenders under the lotus feet of the Lord is set free by the order of the Supreme. This surrendering process is the remedial measure for getting relief from the bewildering ways of the material energy. The surrendering process is completed by the influence of association. The Lord has suggested, therefore, that by the influence of the speeches of saintly persons who have actually realized the Supreme, men are engaged in His transcendental love and service. The conditioned soul gets a taste for hearing about the Lord, and by such hearing only, he is gradually elevated to the platform of respect, devotion, and attachment for the Lord. The whole thing is completed by the surrendering process. Herein also the same suggestion is made by the Lord in His incarnation of Vyasadeva. Notice when Prabhupada gives these terms, they're always in like sambandha abhidayam prayojana. Like here, respect will be, you know, understand the position, devotion is the activity, attachment is your, you know, necessity.
Right? Yes.
Herein the same suggestion is made by the Lord in His incarnation of Vyasadeva. This means that the conditioned souls are being reclaimed by the Lord both ways, namely by the process of punishment by the external energy of the Lord and by Himself as the spiritual master within and without. Right? So both are going on. The Lord comes Himself personally to give association, the great saintly persons, they hear, right? They either see or they hear or they discuss. So then we get the benefit of that association, that positive. And at the same time, then Maya makes it, you know, how you say, that you understand it's not worth your while. Right? So both together are working.
Right? Because if it was just one or the other, then it wouldn't work so good. In other words, Srila Vyasadeva saw not only the disease of the jiva, but also the remedy for it. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary to 176. He saw bhakti yoga, which destroys material existence. One should understand the stages in seeing it. First, he saw the Lord by the use of the word purna. It should be understood that Vyasa saw the Lord with his amshas, the Purusha and Guna avatars. Without his amshas, how can the Lord be considered complete? Purna means complete. Thus Vyasa saw the complete form of the Lord. He saw his chit shakti with many varieties such as Vimala and Utkarshini, which are manifestations of his beauty. He then saw the external energy, Maya shakti, behind the Lord. He saw in the Lord bhakti, the chief element of the chit shakti, which is more powerful than all others, and which can destroy the illusion caused by Maya, and which arises from the actions of his anugraha shakti, mercy, and which controls even the Lord. Having seen all this, he then wrote the Vaishnava scripture called Srimad Bhagavatam, which reveals all this for the ignorant people.
Yes. So actually, to see Krishna Leela is the best way to read Bhagavatam.
Yes. Because that's the whole thing, is this is the Leela as it's been revealed. And so, and it's coming to us through the great devotees, so we get their realization of it. So it's the best. Because right? You're directly associating. There's no difference between hearing from Bhagavatam and, you know, associating on the platform of the pastimes. It's just a matter of how much we appreciate it. Just like the name and Krishna are non-different, so the Bhagavatam and Krishna are non-different.
Yes. So now the samadhi in which Srila Vyasadeva was is the official samadhi, means to be a pure devotee of Krishna, to see Krishna. And there is only, there is no, I can say, personal samadhi.
No, I mean even the Patanjali system, even if the person is an impersonalist, he still has to meditate on Paramatma, on Vishnu. But he just thinks that he is that, right? Rather than he is that, meaning transcendence, the soul. He thinks he is that, the Lord. Yes. You know, the source of, you know, Brahman. So that's the difficulty. Does that make sense? So you always have to meditate on the person, otherwise it's not going to work. Because the Lord is Mukunda, he's the one who gives liberation. So unless the focus is on him, you're not going to get liberation. Right? It means, in other words, if he, you know, Astanga Yogi sat down in his meditation for 60,000 years and he was, you know, meditating on Donald Duck or something, there's a good chance he wouldn't get liberated. He might not even get, you know, mystic siddhis. You know.
Funny voice?
Yeah, right.
So, Marie, this is the same process for example, in Srila Prabhupada or Rita Chaya wrote books, first they are in Samadhi, and then after they see the topics of the book and the book, right?
They're not quite cast.
No, is it the same principle that Vyasadeva wrote Bhagavatam after being in Samadhi?
Yes.
So the Acharya were commenting and Bhagavatam like that, they also follow the same principle?
Yeah, no, it's just, well, Prabhupada mentioned, the purports are manifestations of his ecstatic absorption of Krishna consciousness. Because the thing is they're already on that platform. It's not that they have to go to that platform.
Yes.
The Vyasadeva was playing that aspect of that pastime that he is not the illusion. Because, see, here's, you're dealing with the Supreme Lord, but he's playing this pastime of becoming enlightened, you know, by his devotee, Narad Muni.
Yes.
Like that. Yes. But at the same time, as I think it was Vishwanath also pointed out, is that Swayam Krishna then put his own expansion under his own yoga, maya, so therefore then it comes out that way. Right? And then this whole pastime could take place where Bhagavatam, which is directly Krishna, becomes revealed. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Maharaj, I can see that very, very few jivas use their free will to go to the devotional service.
Yes.
But it will ever happen that everyone at one point of time...
Everyone at some point in time, but it's not at the same time.
Okay.
Everyone at some time will, Prabhupada mentions, every jiva that's here will go back to Godhead. Like that. But it's not that it's all happening at once, because it's not necessary. The point is that situation that you're talking about, that's going on in the spiritual world. Everyone there is Krishna conscious. So it's not that we're looking for heaven on earth. We're just trying to make people Krishna conscious. It's not about by everybody being Krishna conscious, it'll be nicer here. It's about if everyone's Krishna conscious, then, you know, they'll go back to Godhead. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? So you don't have to worry. In the spiritual world, you know, they only eat organic. So you don't have to worry, you know.
No chili.
Huh?
No chili.
No. Black pepper's there.
But sometimes I was wondering, because it's so few compared to all the jivas, not even humans. You know, you see, like, whether some people never make it. You know?
No, everybody makes it.
Everybody.
Yeah, it's just at just some point. It's just how long it takes. That's another thing. It can be a long time. But, you know, that's why they use the term anadi, beginningless, because it's so long. It's just, you know, it's not even worth trying to calculate. Right. Because, you know, 8,400,000 of the species, and so if you only appeared in one of them once, right? Okay, now Brahma is one of them. So that right there is one length of one universe, okay? And then you have Prajapatis, right? And they also live for that long. So now you go through all the 21 Prajapatis, so that right there is another. So now we've got the 22 lifetimes of Brahma. Then there's great sages, and then some of them also live like that. So, you know, you're getting up there. You know, like Narad Muni, that post's not open, right? So, you know, those kinds of things like that. Then you get down to, you know, it's not necessarily only one time you were a dog, you know. So a few times as a dog, some as a horse, you know, then the armadillos, and, then what about those tortoises, right? You know, they live for hundreds of years, one tortoise, you know. You know, so you're talking about a long time, even if you just kind of basically go through everything once, you know. You go through once, and you just add it all up. It's a long time. You know, demigods, you know, some of them live, you know, according to our time, hundreds of thousands of, you know, lifetime, you know, years. And, does that make sense? Yeah, so it's a long time, so it's not even worth calculating. You know, because each soul is going to be different, so you don't even bother. You know, it's only something. Srimad Bhagavatam is so potent that simply by hearing it, one not only gets relief from the material sufferings, but attains love of God, right? So both of them. You remember Krishna, and then you give up forgetting about him. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 177. Simply by hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, one gets attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And as soon as this is effected, the symptoms and the material diseases disappear. Loving devotional service to the Lord begins with the hearing about the Lord. Because as you get attachment to Krishna, you give up the attachment here. That's why devotional service automatically gives knowledge and detachment. Because as soon as you know about Krishna, then and are attached to Krishna, then the other side goes. Does that make sense? So that's why there's no need to separately endeavor. And as soon as this is affected, the symptoms of the material diseases disappear.
Loving devotional service to the Lord begins with hearing about the Lord. There's no difference between the Lord and the subject matter heard about him, right? So the devotional service starts from hearing about the Lord, not from being born in a Brahmin family or performing certain austerities or anything else. It starts from hearing about him.
Yes.
Right? That's the actual qualification. The Lord is absolute in all respects, and thus there is no difference between him and the subject matter heard about him. Right. So that's why hearing Bhagavatam and is okay, yeah, here. Therefore, hearing about him means immediate contact with him by the process of vibration of the transcendental sound. So you're directly associating with the Lord. So that's the whole point, is that you start the process there. Like you questioned before, how do you start? Because there needs to be qualifications, but that will give you the qualification to be able to appreciate it. So you're already spiritually advancing, even though you may not fully have an understanding of what's going on. But you're still spiritually advancing, and that will make you qualified that then you will
appreciate it.
Like that. And the transcendental sound is so effective that it acts at once by removing all material affections mentioned above. The conclusion is that simply by hearing the Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, one can have direct connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And thereby, one can attain the highest perfection of life by transcending worldly miseries, illusion, and fearfulness. These are practical tests for one who has actually given a submissive hearing to the readings of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So miseries, illusion, and fearfulness, they go away. Right? So that's the test. But it says here, submissive hearing. Right? That's how it works. So footnote 70. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Srimad Bhagavatam as the spotless Purana and a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Garuda Purana also glorifies the Bhagavatam as, quote, perfectly complete. It is the purport to Vedanta Sutra, establishes the meaning of Mahabharata, and is a commentary on Gayatri, and completes the message of the Vedas. It is the Samaveda among the Puranas, spoken directly by an incarnation of God, Vyasadeva. This work consists of 12 cantos, hundreds of chapters, and 18,000 verses. It's called Srimad Bhagavatam. Right, so here it's giving that complete thing, purport to the Vedanta Sutra. So it's not, it's a new thing that just we say that, but it's, this is already there in the literature. Establishes the meaning of Mahabharata. So if you understand Bhagavatam, then you actually understand Mahabharata. Otherwise, then one will get distracted. Right? Completes the message of the Vedas are saying about devotion to Krishna, and so here it's being established. Samaveda among the Puranas. Samaveda is the prominent Veda amongst the Vedas. Verses 8-11. Srila Vyasadeva teaches Srimad Bhagavatam to Sukadeva Goswami. Srila Suta Goswami continued, the great sage Vyas, after compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, taught it to his own son, Sri Sukadeva Goswami, who was already engaged in self-realization. Text 8. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the word kritvanukramya, after compiling and revising it, means that Srila Vyasadeva first compiled an abbreviated form of the Bhagavatam. Later on, he received instructions from Narad Muni and revised it. Srimad Bhagavatam was imparted to the great soul, Sri Sukadeva Goswami, who was a liberated person. Srila Prabhupada describes Sukadeva's birth in his purport to 9:21-25. So here he's, because he was thinking that there was something wrong, that he hadn't described the glories of the Lord directly, that he had already given a summary form or an abridged form of Bhagavatam that he had written. But so when Narad Muni came and confirmed this, and then he also received the Chakra Shloki. Right, so then with that understanding of Achintaveda Veda Tattva, then he has now compiled the Bhagavatam as it is. So this was taught to Sukadeva Goswami. Okay, in Prabhupada's purports. Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, is described in great detail in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. There it is said that Vyasadeva maintained the daughter Jabali as his wife, and that after they performed penances together for many years, he placed a seed in her womb. The child remained in the womb of his mother for 12 years. And when the father asked the son to come out, the son replied that he would not come out unless he were completely liberated from the influence of Maya. Vyasadeva then assured the child that he would not be influenced by Maya. But the child did not believe his father, for the father was still attracted to his wife and children, right? Because otherwise, why is he worried that he comes out? It means he's Brahman, everything's fine, right? Yeah. You know, so that he wanted to come out, and you know, so then it's something like that.
I'm not coming out.
Yeah, yeah. Vyasadeva then went to Dwarka and informed the personality of Godhead about his problem.
What's it?
Yeah, and the personality of Godhead, at Vyasadeva's request, went to Vyasadeva's cottage, where he assured the child in the womb that he would not be influenced by Maya. Thus assured, the child came out, but he immediately went away as a Parivrajakacharya. When his father, very much aggrieved, began to follow his saintly boy, Sukadeva Goswami, the boy created a duplicate Sukadeva, who later entered family life. Therefore, this Sukha Kanya, or daughter of Sukadeva, mentioned in this verse, is the daughter of the duplicate or imitation Sukadeva. The original Sukadeva was a lifelong brahmachari.
Ninth
canto. This is purport to 9:21-25. One way to keep your parents happy, right? You go take sannyas and leave a duplicate.
Maybe right? Something for the Indian community.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm saying it would be a good program if you could do it, right? Sri Saunaka asked Suta Goswami. Sri Sukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased with his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? Suta Goswami said, all different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in Atma, or spirit self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, although free from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service under the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including the liberated souls. Okay, footnote 71. This is the famous Atmarama shloka. While in Puri, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained this shloka to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in 18 different ways. After hearing this explanation, Sarvabhauma realized that Mahaprabhu must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, the Lord being attractive, therefore, it's It's not a problem, right? Because he's saying, why did he undergo the great, the trouble? But because one's on the transcendental platform, it's not a trouble. Right? It's just natural. It's nice to hear. Srila Sukadeva Goswami, son of Srila Vyasadeva, was not only transcendentally powerful; he was also very dear to the devotees of the Lord. Thus he underwent the study of this great narration, Srimad Bhagavatam, 9-11. Even liberated persons are attracted by the spiritual qualities of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada summarizes the meaning of the Atmarama shloka as follows. Atma means self, and Arama means to take pleasure. Everyone is searching after the highest pleasure, but the standard of pleasure of one may be different from the standard of another. Therefore, the standard of pleasure enjoyed by the karmis is different from that of the Atmaramas. The Atmaramas are completely indifferent to material enjoyment in every respect. Srila Sukadeva Goswami had already attained that stage, and still he was attracted to undergo the trouble of studying the great Bhagavatam literature. This means that Srimad Bhagavatam is a postgraduate study even for the Atmaramas, who have surpassed all the studies of Vedic knowledge. Right, so that, yeah, that's why we see we're using it as a postgraduate study. According to Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Srila Sukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul even within the womb of his mother. Srila Vyasadeva knew that the child, after his birth, would not stay at home. Therefore, he, Vyas, impressed upon him the synopsis of the Bhagavatam so that the child could be made attached to the transcendental activities of the Lord. After his birth, the child was still more educated in the subject of Bhagavatam by recitation of the actual poems. The idea is that generally the liberated souls are attached to the feature of impersonal Brahman with a monistic view of becoming one with the Supreme Whole. But by the association of pure devotees like Vyas, even the liberated soul becomes attracted to the transcendental qualities of the Lord. So that's why it's not so important that people are, okay, they're interested in the Indian culture, Vedic culture, or different things like that. Because generally speaking, they may be, but on the non-devotional platform, it will always be karma or jnana. Right? So now if you take that and give devotion, then it's a worthwhile. Then it means that, you know, functioning from a more pious platform. But if one doesn't, then just because they're following something from the Vedas doesn't mean it's useful. Right? It's pious, but it won't get you back to God. So here then he's liberated. And then he gave him the synopsis of this Bhagavatam. Right? While he's still in the womb. Right, so when he comes out, because he knows as soon as he's born, he's going to leave. Right, so therefore he thought of Bhagavatam before he left. Well, he's in the womb. Right, it's not a problem because they've already had conversations as it is.
Like the mother must feel kind of left out somehow.
No, if she gets to hear all the conversations. Like that. An objection may be raised. Quote, can bhakti liberate the liberated? Can the Bhagavatam, a scripture on bhakti, deliver those who have surpassed scriptures? Footnote 72. In the Atmarama Shloka, the word nirgrantha can refer to those who are freed from scriptures, as described in the Bhagavad Gita 2.52. When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard.
And, I always wanted to know what that meant.
Sorry?
I always wanted to know what that meant, out of the dense forest of delusion.
Yes. So here then is being pointed out is that the freed from scriptures means you're freed from having to follow the rules of scriptures that are meant for conditioned souls. Because then you'll be following the transcendental rules. Because if you have no... It's like this. Why do you have to have rules in the material world?
Right?
Yeah, it's going to be crazy because everybody wants everything. Right? So then how will that work? So there has to be rules on how everybody can, you know, enjoy according to their previous work, you know, their little portion of the material world. Right? Now, if someone has no interest in enjoying anything of this world, do you need any rules to control them? No. So they'll only use exactly what's necessary at that moment, right? They come to a river, they need to take a bath, they'll take a bath. They're thirsty, they'll drink some water. They're not, they won't. You know what I'm saying? They won't start a, you know, how you say, Himalaya, you know, bottled water, you know, kind of company because, you know, hey, we could make money off of this. You know, so it's just not going to happen. They're going to deal with everybody properly because they see everybody as soul. You understand? So that's the meaning that who are freed from scriptures. So for such a person, then how will Bhagavatam liberate those who are already on this liberated platform? Right? Can a work discussing a server and the served, the Lord, deliver those who have given up the identities of ego? Because they don't have an identity. They're just Brahman. So how can something that's talking about two people liberate such persons?
Yes.
Right? Can the rules of bhakti described in the Bhagavatam deliver those who have given up all rules and prohibitions? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answers in his commentary to 1.7.10. To destroy all such protests, the verse says, Itam Bhuta Guna. The Lord has such attractive qualities that even Atmaramas become attracted. Because of their practice with predominance of bhakti, or even just by mercy alone, the Lord gave mercy to the Kumaras, thinking, let them realize my qualities. Vyasadeva gave mercy to Sukadeva, thinking, let him realize Krishna's qualities. The Lord or the devotees may give mercy to some other Atmaramas in the same way. Having attained that qualification for realizing the Lord's qualities, these Atmaramas perform unmotivated bhakti. Other Atmaramas perform bhakti with the goal of merging into Brahman. The word ahaituki cannot be applied to their bhakti. Concerning them, it is said, having attained the state of Brahman, being a pure soul, the Atmarama does not lament the loss of what he had, nor does he desire what he does not have, and looks upon all beings as equal. He then manifests prema bhakti. Only by bhakti can a person know me as Brahman. Then, knowing me as Brahman, by that bhakti he merges with me. Bhagavad Gita 18:54-55. So, we remember Madhvacharya, his definition of liberation means being in a relationship with the Lord, because any other form of liberation is going to be temporary. So it's technically not, if we're talking about liberation being freed from the material world, you talk about that as being, you know, for a long time. You know, you don't talk about the guy jumped over the wall, and as soon as he got over the wall, there was some guy standing there, and they picked him up and took him and put him back inside. And they could say, yeah, I was liberated, you know. Probably won't go down well with everybody inside. They'll all just say, that was stupid. So, therefore, the Bhagavatam is attractive to the Atmaramas or liberated, because then it brings to the stage of actual liberation or permanent liberation. Because otherwise they're only in the position of temporary liberation. Right? And so then by the Lord, by the association of the devotees, by the practice of devotional service, then one comes to that stage. So for someone on that platform, they would still practice the process of devotional service. But they wouldn't have any conditioning, so nothing would get in the way of their practice. Right? So it'll move very quickly. Okay. So then only by bhakti can a person know me as Brahman. Because otherwise they know Brahman, but they don't understand the person is Brahman. So they don't understand that Brahman is coming from that person, that they're non-different. You know, like the sun and the sun rays. So the qualities of Krishna as Brahman, the Saguna Brahman, Saguna Brahman is not different from the Lord, but it's the person who is the source, right? So this transcendental position of understanding only through bhakti. Otherwise, they can only get up to the Brahman understanding. They don't take it beyond that. Then knowing me as Brahman by that bhakti emerges with me. So therefore, he becomes Brahman also, right? But it's still servitor and serve Brahman. Right? So that's the point. Unless you know the person through bhakti, then you can understand how Brahman actually functions. Then one comes to that level of Brahman. Right? And so he merges with me, then also can be here that element of, then he enters into the Lord's pastimes. Right? Because then you can say one's always with the Lord. Because otherwise before that, one is not. One in the Brahman platform, they're not with the Lord. Even if they see the Lord, it's not about pastimes with him. Right? It's just he's the Supreme Brahman. But they don't really appreciate how the person is Brahman. Mm-hmm. You understand? Yes.
Saguna Brahman is only understood through bhakti.
Yes, because otherwise then the default is nirguna. Mm-hmm. Yes.
If the guru is pleased with the disciple, then he reveals his most intimate friend, you know, because he's like pleased with the character. So then he shares his his good friends.
Yes, 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 you could say like that. But even more is he's sharing that association of those who are the servants of Krishna. Because that's really how you know Krishna. You know Krishna through the servants. You know, because otherwise there's Krishna and you, now what? You know, if Krishna walked in and said, "Hi, what would you do?"
Yeah.
So I'm Rob.
Some rounds there.
Yeah. It's almost time for breakfast. You know, saying that's the whole point. So the associates know how to associate with Krishna, right? So that is that point. They're merged with Krishna. So that means that mood is common. So then from them we learn that mood. That's why it's all about the mood and learning that mood. Because otherwise Krishna, yeah, he can stand there. Now what? Thus, the transcendental qualities of the Lord were so attractive that Srila Sukadeva Goswami became detached from being completely absorbed in impersonal Brahman and took up the positive devotional activities for the pleasure of the Lord. In his commentary, right, because in other words, they're moving from one transcendental platform to the next, but they're moving up, right? In his commentary to 1.7.11, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes how the final stage of this transformation took place. Vyas made Sukadev, who was in continual trance in a lonely forest, hear selected verses from the Bhagavatam, which describe Krishna's qualities to some of his followers. 73. Some say that these selected verses were 3.2.23 and 10.21.5. They describe Krishna's mercy and beauty. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful, and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. 3.2.23. Wearing a peacock feather ornament on his head, blue karnika flowers on his ears, a yellow garment as brilliant as gold, not blue jeans, and a Vaijayanti garland, Lord Sri Krishna exhibited his transcendental form as the greatest of dancers as he entered the forest of Vrindavan, beautifying it with the marks of his footprints. He filled the holes of his flute with the nectar of his lips, and the cowherd boys sang his glories. 10.21.5. By the power of those verses, his trance was broken. His mind, attracted to the sweetness, broke the trance. Knowing these verses were from the Bhagavatam because of his omniscience, and knowing that his father was the source of revealing those verses, he went to Vyas and learned Bhagavatam. This story is told in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. After conquering father and son, Vyasa and Sukadev, crest jewels of Brahman realization, bhakti made them like an umbrella which gives relief to the whole world. Those who do not consider bhakti in this way, being led astray, are like thieves who deserve the punishment of Yama. Yeah, so then we have this element that now he's gone out in the forest, and so then again he attracts them, and then he comes back, and then he teaches them, you know, the Bhagavatam. Because before that he only taught like essential points. And so because of that, when he heard these verses, he recognized what it was. Okay, and then here's this point, is that those who do not consider bhakti in this way, that it is the you know, crest jewel of Brahman realization, like that element. Is that, in other words, Brahman realization is a, how you say,
stepping stone.
Yeah, a stepping stone, but Brahman is you can say a generic, depending on how you're using it, a generic category of just meaning transcendence. So the crest jewel of that is Krishna as a person, that of him as a person, and him as Braja Krishna, and of that of him and his pastimes with his devotees. Right, so that's your Bhagavatam.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So then who doesn't understand in this way that bhakti is which gives relief to the whole world, then they deserve to be punished by Yama. Because if you don't understand it this way, then every chance you'll be led astray. If you don't understand that bhakti is actually what will give relief, one will take shelter of other things to give relief.
Yes.
Right?
And now, this bhakti made the relation between the father and son perfect.
Yes,
so
yes. Okay. Yeah. Means on the platform of dharma, then you know they're already doing a great job.
Yes.
But here's then as devotees it becomes perfect. Right? You know, then it's you could say this is the real, you yes. know, father and son yes. relationship. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why here is mentioned at the crowd the study of Srimad Bhagavatam, especially for this Maharaj?
No, we're using the term trouble because it's very big. Their point was is he's already Atmarama. So generally Atmaramas are functioning beyond the scriptures. It means they whatever is learned in the scriptures, they've already attained. You know, I'm just like you know, just like if you read you know, you don't know anything about computers, so you read, you know, Computers for Dummies, right? Once you've read it and understood it, you don't need the book. You're already functioning beyond it. So that was their point. Why would he go to the trouble to learn that if he's already Atmarama? But then it's pointed out is that this literature itself is on the transcendental platform, the highest platform. So therefore, Atmarama is on the Brahman platform, but he's attracted to it. And so therefore, that's why they'll study it. So then it's not a trouble for them. The trouble means in comparison to your regular pious activities. But this is transcendental. Okay, so end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Chanyatai Gaura ki.
Between Shukadev and Vyasadev. They were apparently not pure devotees in the beginning, like Vyasadev not in Samadhi.
No, they can be pure devotees, but it's just a matter of it's that the he wasn't, because he's supposed to compile the Vedic literatures, he wasn't presenting that element of pure devotion. Otherwise, how did he understand that's probably why he's not happy? And also, how is it he did an abridged version of Bhagavatam already before meeting Bharata? So the point is it's they're already pure. Now Shukadeva in the womb before hearing Bhagavatam is just the Brahma body. But then hearing Bhagavatam in the womb, then he becomes a devotee. Because the point is what's the reason to come out? If it's all Brahman, it doesn't matter if you're inside or outside, it's all Brahman. But when one can come out and render service, so then he was interested to appear. But then in appearance, he didn't want to get entangled, so he didn't.
Yes.
Quite a guy.
Huh?
Quite a guy.
They know what they want.
Yeah.
Very
focused.
Yes.
And what he wants.
Yeah. You should write a book.
Yeah.
In the same time, there's the past tense. Because Shukadeva is Harut, Krishna. Yeah. Vyasadeva is Krishna himself. This is the influence of Yoga Maya.
That's there, but that is only if there's some doubt. But as a higher element of it, that's not so important. Because that's just sambandha. But the point is knowing that, what are you going to do?
Yes.
Because Abhideya, that's your bhakti. You know, and Prayojan is the love of God. So these facts are nice to know. They explain some, you know, technical points. But they're only there to make some connections or remove some doubts or that. But they're not actually the main focus. That's why you see they're not brought up constantly. They're only here and there when a certain situation comes up. Then they're brought out.
Thank you.